Welcome to another special episode of Atlanta's only pro-business radio talk show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Buckhead, inside the Business Radio X studios.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Jeff Sheehan, the host of the Sales Influences Radio Show. And today we have a great guest, John Newman, one of the partners of True North Growth. And I'm telling you, I'm really looking forward to this today, John, with you, because I've known you quite a while now. And I know you're a great salesperson, a great sales manager, mentor. And I could, the list could go on as to how I could describe you with regard to adjectives and that, and the great things that you're doing in the sales world out there today. Tremendous background in the area. And I think our listeners today are going to learn an awful lot about the sales process, some of the challenges today, and what you're doing to try to help companies remedy some of their sales challenges and the pain points and what have you. So without further ado, John, I'd like to turn it over to you and introduce yourself, talk about your background, and how you really came to be where you are today.
Well, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate those nice comments. Where I came today was I started out with a company called Allied Chemical many, many years ago. Through a lot of transitions, it ended up as Honeywell. Spent 20 years at a corporate level, ending my career there in a sales and marketing executive position. And then I had this burning desire to become an entrepreneur. Left there and started a couple businesses, mainly in the building products industry. Started a commercial renovation and residential renovation business, and that led into a cabinet distribution business. But we came into a very poor time of the economy, and that was 2006, 2007. Really had a very vibrant brand, but not a lot of customers buying product at that time, and the new home business just went completely downward. Since that time, I really have started my passion, and that is working and coaching business owners, salespeople, entrepreneurs on really how can they move the needle, how can they develop business and get somebody to pay them for their service. And it's a pretty tricky thing. And at the corporate life, people will pay you weekly, monthly, however that works out. But when you're in your own business, there's no guarantees of that. So being an extraordinary salesperson and business development is really the key to making sure that you could feed your family and continue a lifestyle that is important for you.
Yeah, and one of the things, John, as you know, I give talks at all kinds of career ministries and business to businesses throughout Greater Atlanta as well as nationally. And everyone now, whether they realize it or not, is a salesperson. So I think you're in the right spot at the right time, because the fact that the average job tenure is about 2.7 years. So what you're trying to do to help people, whether entrepreneurs or whatever, become better salespeople is admirable. And I think it's something that is really needed. Everyone knows has to know how to sell.
Absolutely.
It's critical. And most people don't. As I mentioned earlier this morning to someone, they're like deer in headlights. They have no clue, and it's a shame. But most people don't have the skill set that you and I have with regard to that, and they're completely lost. So tell me about some of the things you do with regard to assisting companies in that. What are some of the pain points you see in today, some of the challenges out there, and how are you addressing those?
You know, the simplest thing to look at is is your company and how are the people in your company responding to the outside world? For instance, let's say you own an HVAC company or a flooring retail company or whatever that is. Your first point of contact is the way you answer the telephone. And if you're not completely engaging to that potential client, you may miss a very big opportunity. You know, look at the number of times you call into an insurance agency or a doctor's office, and if you get treated rudely, that there goes your expectation for the rest of your time doing that.
More importantly, though, John, I had this discussion again with someone this morning. Is they do surveys of all their customers and what their thoughts are, and the number one pet peeve of most people out there now, at least their customer base, is the inability for them to talk to someone within that organization. Now what has happened, you think again, so many social media pundits, you do everything social media through emails and that. People still want to have the ability to talk to people. And if they do talk to people, you want to make sure that whatever they're saying back to the customers is correct and they're treating them admirably and what have you.
Absolutely. And most, social media is a huge presence. but still the consumer is going to pick up the phone at some point and call that business. And if he or she picks up that phone and calls the business and you get somebody who is not having the best day or they're just plain rude on the phone, that's the reputation of your business. So it all starts with the leader of that company developing the type of people and the phone skills that are required to make sure that anybody calling your business is a welcome prospect.
So that's really a starting point in working with some of these organizations, seeing what their front line looks like with regard to just some simple tasks like picking up the phone. What do they do in that regard? So you do an audit, I would assume, of that and look at the pain points, or look at what kind of problems they're having in that, and then make a determination what has to be improved and then go about teaching them in that particular area?
Well, in our specific business, in True North's business, we work with manufacturers and retailers, specifically in the flooring business. And part of what we're doing right now is they know that lead generation is extremely important via the internet. But again, we help them create a plan for when anybody within the organization picks up the telephone, the warehouse people, the service manager, the salespeople, the front desk people, everybody is speaking the same language and singing off the same song sheet, and that is a very welcoming tone. Oftentimes, we tell them, go back and listen to these phone calls. Listen to how your people are picking up the phone, how they're talking to these folks, you know, via a one-minute conversation or a 10-minute conversation, and go back and coach. It's so important to actually help these people understand what they're doing and not doing as far as the process.
And one thing that's good about that, it doesn't cost a ton of money for companies to be doing this.
It differentiates you right away.
Right, absolutely. And so the thing is, you teach them, you give them scripts as to how they should respond and talk to them about that and how they should go through that with regard to certain scenarios, how they should answer the phone and respond accordingly with regard to that.
You know, if nothing more, get the customer's name, telephone number, and a way to reach them again. So often somebody calls and, you know, you answer their question. Instead of engaging them a little further, you take the easy way out and you hang up the phone. Well, that's for a business that thrives on sales and people coming into their store to make a selection. It's very important. At that very moment, they may be just looking for price information, but if you can, you know, get them into the store in a very polite, endearing way, you're most likely gonna change, influence that purchase decision where they have options to go elsewhere. And we often know that the big box companies put you on hold and send you to department A, B, or C. Help them right then and there and create that differentiating experience.
I totally agree with you, and I think it's something that's being so overly looked now. What they try to do is they try to hide behind their websites. Mm-hmm. They think the websites can do everything for them and for their businesses, and they're fearful, I think. They don't want to. First of all, the investment, which is somewhat minimal when you consider people that are in call centers or whatever versus what the overall scheme of things. If you lose those sales and that, so they hide behind that, and they want everything to go through transactions through the internet, and it doesn't always work. I can't tell you the number of times when I try to reach out to a company to speak to someone, and like you said, you go from point A to point B to point C to point D, point E. There's a major cable TV company out there, I don't want to name who it is, who, seriously, in order to get through to a real live human being, you have to go through about 20 steps. I feel like it's back in as a kid at Howard Johnson's, deciding what flavor of the month, flavor of the week I was going to take as far as ice cream is concerned.
Absolutely. And the frustration begins immediately. So if you're frustrated starting off a telephone call, where do you think that's going to end up as far as making potential purchase or potential sale? So it really has a lot to do with just creating the tone right off the get-go. But it's just not that. It's how does the leader of that company walk the walk? Are they picking up the phone and living by example? Are they greeting customers in the correct way? So everybody in the business needs to be engaged and really work off the same requirements as the owner, the vice president, all the way to the people that are working just installing and whatnot. Every connection that you make with the customer has an everlasting experience for both the customer and for the company.
Now, I was going to say ask you, trying to sell this within organizations, has it been difficult, or what type of barriers have you faced in trying to sell this whole methodology to companies? They probably feel that they're doing everything correct, and you come in there, you talk to these higher-level executives. What kind of resistance have you had? How have you convinced them that this approach that you're advocating really makes sense?
A lot of them has been an aha moment where you get in there, and we have a large manufacturer that's hired us to do a lot of their training. So we've gone in via that manufacturer to preset training sessions. And so often, you know, as with a lot of training, people come in because they have to. That's what the boss says they have to do. But once we sit there and we talk about how can you really make a difference and differentiate yourself from brand X to brand Y, they start getting it and they start understanding. And when we go back and say, have you put these things in place? Because we give them a whole outline and a process map of really what is the most effective way of engaging that client the minute they enter your portal, meaning your website or your telephone.
Okay, now do you go back to them after several months and do a secondary audit of what they're doing at that time and see how effective it's been and what kind of measurement criteria or metrics you set up so that this can be measured?
It's really up to the company if they want further interaction, but the metrics are leads that are generated and leads that are closed. I mean, it's a pretty simple process. So, you know, if they have X number of leads that they're going to get off of their internet, off of their advertising, if it's newsprint, if it's radio, television, so they're going to get X number of leads. But more importantly, so often it was ignored, the leads that they would get via the internet, they really didn't know how to work those leads. So now, you know, we're judging, or not judging, but measuring how many leads are they getting through their internet. You know, are they doing the right SEO and SMO and all the things that are written into the body of their website, but what is the conversion rate and what are you selling? How are you creating that sales and just looking at just sheer volume at the end of each month? What is the gross sales volume and are you increasing it? And are your people going back to them? Are they saying the right things to the consumer?
Now, you have a valid point there with regard to lead generation. I think if you look at majority of companies out there generating leads through websites or through other means, majority of those collect dust in an awful lot of organizations. So in your particular case, how did you convince them, first of all, to work those leads, and what procedures did they put in place to make sure that the leads that they were receiving through the website or through other means were actually worked, whether it's by themselves or through their channel partners?
It's a great question. Our other partner in the business, Miguel Yelo San Martin, is a large architect designer for automobile industry. And we talked a lot about the automobile industry, how they collect leads via the internet now. So they have, in fact, one of the organizations that we benchmark once had people spending at least an hour to 2 hours not following up, or excuse me, when I say sales people, I mean salespeople not following up on those leads. Well, they have brought it down to within 5 to 7 minutes of that the automobile salesperson follows up with the consumer. Once that site is hit, they're getting a call from, you know, whatever car dealership that they're inquiring about. So we've taken that same measurement and we've brought it to the flooring industry. And we've created the same kind of dynamics where if you have a lead and you get it within 5, 10, 20 minutes, you should get back to that person immediately, because we all know how busy our lives can get. You go on to the next project, you forgot what site you were on, you know, yesterday, 2 hours ago. So it's very important that the urgency and following up on the lead is very dramatic.
Now, if you look at that, though, I mean, from a follow-up perspective, are they doing that through email? Are they doing it through phone calls? Or what type of interaction are they utilizing?
We suggest follow up with a telephone call. And then if you don't hear back from the person, explain, you know, why you're calling. Call them again later on that afternoon, and then following up with an email. We provide scripts and whatnot to help them along. But just getting them to be conditioned to follow up on all internet leads as quickly as possible really differentiates the fact that most people aren't doing that. They're letting time pass, and you let a warm lead pass. You're now looking at something that'll never come to fruition.
Right. So they have some type of mechanism within their websites for email and phone number gathering. Some type of, are they giving a giveaway or some type of promotional thing, a discount or what?
Sometimes it's coupons. Sometimes it's you know, free installation. It just depends on the retailer or the manufacturer that's offering it.
Okay. And then what the manufacturer in that particular case, they have dealers that are organized from a geographical perspective. So then they feed those leads, they send them out email blasts. So how do they actually generally work those leads through the system?
It either goes through the retailer's portal or it goes directly through the manufacturer's portal, and then it's transferred on to what we call the lead generation administrator. And that person needs to be specifically paying attention to when those leads come in and how they're being disseminated to the audience, to really who is your best salesperson to follow up and get. And you're not looking to sell anything at this point, Jeff. You're looking to create that relationship, which is hugely important because, you know, I can't imagine a product being, you know, costing $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000 being sold on the telephone. But let me tell you something, it could be lost on that telephone call as well.
Correct. So essentially, it's an education process, then creating that relationship, and then nurturing that and not selling. And the sales is left to the actual, probably face-to-face meeting with that particular.
Absolutely.
Right.
The consumer has to come in and touch it and feel it. And it's just in the same thing in a car, in an automobile purchase. You know, you could look on the website and say, this has all the features that I want. But until you get into that car and you drive it, you know, 2-3 miles and really understand what it can offer you, it's a very hands-on experience. And a big part of the sales training then goes into the interaction between the salesperson and the consumer on the sales floor.
So that you described the position there, though, that the person handles a lead gen administrator. And quite honest with you, I think that's really something relatively new with the overall industry. I mean, I think before that used to be various individuals within organizations would handle that. And now it looks like that's a specialty and people actually being trained not only to how to handle them, but how to measure in the effectiveness with the regard to the people that are actually closing those deals with regard to it.
If you give somebody the responsibility of owning the project, then they're going to actually own the project. But if it haphazardly goes to a variety of people, nobody really has the accountability, nor do they have the urgency to pass along that lead. But if they know that that's what they're being measured on, and the efficiency of these leads being handled, that's the biggest draw there.
Yeah, very, very effective system, I would think, with this company. Have they achieved a great ROI as a result of this type of approach?
You know, in this specific industry, in the building products industry, it's a little lag behind some of the more high-tech industries. But they're seeing that's really the way that the consumer is purchasing right now. Again, they're not making any purchases online, so you have to get out of the mindset that you're selling over the internet. All you're doing is inviting the consumer into your location via the internet. You're making it accessible and attractive enough for them to want to pick up the phone and or visit that location.
Now, one of the things with regard to this whole thing is, you know, channel partners for so many manufacturers are very, very important, whether it's distributors or outlets in the carpet industry, mm-hmm. The retail outlets. Now, with regard to this lead generation position, how do they make sure that the channel partners, whether distributors or the end retailers, are following up on leads so they have a grading system? And then as it moving out with regard to other leads that are generated, then based on that determination, assigning what particular retailer distributor is going to get the handful of leads or whatever it might be? Is that how they're working it now? Are they holding these dealers? Are they holding these distributors accountable for each lead that they're receiving?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the answer is yes and no. Typically, the people that are getting the lion's share of the lead generation are the bell cow type retailers in certain markets. But there really is there's very little accountability because, again, these are independent businesses that are running their own operations. So in the case of a franchise business, you'd have more accountability for it. But in the case of independent retailers, you can only ask them to do and suggest things that are very important and critical to their structure of their business. And, you know, it's everybody knows it's the right thing to do. But at the end of the day, I mean, certain retailers and dealers just get, you know, so darn busy trying to deal with the problem of the day and the, you know, all the fires that they're putting out, that so often the blocking and tackling of issues gets missed.
And John, you recall, maybe it's a couple of years ago, we had this discussion concerning the retailers and certainly franchisees, but basically the training that is so lacking. Manufacturers don't, in a lot of cases, don't do a very good job of training the retailers or the distributors of that and how to sell and the sales process. And I think that's a fundamental mistake. And I think that if any of our listeners out there, they're involved in selling through the channels, made a more conservative effort of training their distributors or their retail partners as to how to sell and teach the individuals within, the manufacturers would benefit handsomely.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's a training is one of those budget items that you have to have, but so often it gets put, you know, to the back of the line because there's other things that come up. And again, most businesses are run by crisis. So unless it's a crisis that is coming up that day, so often they're ignoring the training. And oftentimes on the retail floor, you had a very good salesperson. Guess what? They get promoted to manager, but they don't know how to coach. They don't know how to manage. So that's really the biggest challenge I think a lot of industries have, is creating the right coaching format and the right leadership format at the individual level, store level.
You hit on a really, certainly a point that I've been aware of for so many years. The best salespeople get promoted to sales manager, and it actually, it really is not, in a lot of cases, a great fit for organizations. They're probably better off leaving those great salespeople as great salespeople and promoting someone else that has better management skills to that position of sales manager. I don't think the salespeople that are really making their numbers or exceeding the numbers are going to be upset with that. I think that they continue to welcome the sales channels. It's actually two breeds, different breeds of individuals. You probably experienced that throughout your career, as I have.
Absolutely. You find the times that the salesperson, you know, their training is to go follow the best salesperson around for a couple days. Well, that's really not coaching. That's not explaining really all the nuances, how to read body language, how to take the customer to, you know, understand the various levels of the purchase that they're making, how to open that conversation. I mean, so often, you know, you hear somebody walk into a retail store and you say, "Can I help you?" Guess what answer you can give them? No. I mean, so you'd never want to open a sale with any kind of, you know, closed-ended question like that. So it's just little things that a coach or a manager can, you know, set aside and really develop salespeople to the best way of engaging, you know, new clients.
I think it's money well spent, regardless of what industry you're in. If you're dealing with the public, whether it's through a distributor type arrangement, any public that you're dealing with, is if you train the people that have are on the front lines or even in the back with regard to customer service on how to sell, the return on investment is going to be dramatic.
Oh, absolutely.
Yet so many companies overlook this, John, as we've talked about. And so how do they start? What do you advocate for these companies? They go out and set it as a budget item for the following year, following 6 months or whatever, and make a concerted effort to train each and every one out there that has frontline accessibility to the customer and that to do this?
In an ideal world, yes. That would be, you know, and that's really our go-to-market strategy, is we really try to, you know, work with these people and talk about how are you holding your people accountable? What are you doing to lead your people? What are you measuring them on? I mean, if you're merely measuring somebody on gross sales, they could have one or two clients that give them the lion's share of their business, but they're not doing anything for new business development. And this is something that's extremely important. We talk a lot about the networking aspect, and we're here in the studio with Rich, you know, as well. So many of these retailers, their folks never attend a networking event. There's so much local business to be gained from just showing up at your chamber meetings, at your BNI meetings, all those type of things, and just creating relationships. Because I've told this, countless times, is every person that you meet in throughout your career at some point is going to have a need for your product. And the idea is not to go sell them at a networking event, is to create that relationship. So a big part of that is how do you coach somebody to go and work, a networking function, those type of things.
Well, I think the fundamental issue with regard to that is that if you're in a corporate environment, most people in corporate environments don't know what BNI is. They don't know what the chamber is. They don't know what the local networking events are. So for them to actually teach people how to network, whether it's distributors or retail partners and that, very, very difficult for them to even advocate that because they have no understanding of that entire marketplace. So I think it's incumbent upon manufacturers to have their salespeople or the sales management, VPs of sales and that, go out and experience some of these things like BNI, some of the local networking. If they're selling to the end consumer, if they're selling to like distributors or working through the channels, then what networking events are the distributors in? And make sure that they become a strong part of that and glean as much as they possibly can about the entire networking process within those respective areas.
Absolutely. I mean, the local networking was brand new to me when I left the corporate world.
Same here.
But I realize, there is a ton of business, and local business owners want to do business with local businesses. It's a big part of the strategy. So really, how can you get your people connected to other people that you're not meeting? So it's as you and I know, you can really never know enough people, and you can never have enough really strong relationships. And again, that's not going there and forcing a relationship. It's a natural progression of just getting to know somebody's, something about their life and making sure that you are helping them before asking for anything. That's the biggest aspect of networking is seeing if you can go out of your way to help somebody else. And again, not in any kind of way that's not sincere. Sincerity and just really trying to be a person that they can count on is really the best way of networking.
And that's something else that people need to be trained on, how to network. That's, answer the phone, and how to close the sales, and that networking is such a critical component of business success. Yet so many companies overlook that. They really need training in that particular discipline as well to become effective at. Otherwise, I call them drive-by networking, drive-by business circulation, business cards circulating opportunities. Where people go to networking meetings, then as you know, they'll hand out 50, 100 or more business cards. And then next thing you know, you're getting a phone call from them. Can you introduce me to so-and-so? I mean, there's a whole art and science in that that's going to lead to further relationship nurturing and everything else. And they overlook that.
Absolutely. It's so critical. People think business right now is so technically savvy and everything else. It is, but it still comes down to basic relationships. And if you're not doing the basic things of creating, again, relationships with your employees, creating leadership and accountability, but more so than that, creating a relationship with your client base. I have, not to brag, but I have the same clients I've been working with for 30 years in a couple different businesses right now, which is, it's a long-term plan. But again, you need to make sure that you give somebody the right attitude, the right service, and continue to do it every single time. You're going to have, clients that come back to you for years. And that's really, it's the key and the principle to creating strong, networking opportunities.
I totally agree with you. As a matter of fact, when I talk about social media and that, I think so many of the social media pundits out there, it's all about client acquisition. It's not about nurturing the relationships which you already have with your customers. Mm-hmm. And the return on investment from actually upselling, cross-selling, and nurturing those relationships is phenomenal versus acquiring a customer. Acquiring a customer is so much more expensive, and I think that is so overlooked. And you're someone who's really done such a tremendous job in that area, John.
Thanks.
To continue to have those relationships after so many years. And I think, having known you now for quite a while, I think you really walk the talk with regard to nurturing those relationships and paying for it, helping people out. What is in it for them, not as what is in it for me.
Absolutely.
And you have to develop that mentality. And as a sales trainer such as you are, I'm sure you're trying to inculcate that within all of the sales organizations that you're teaching, that develop that mindset is what is in it for the customer, not is what is in it for the organization.
You're absolutely right. The biggest thing we talk about is behavior. The first thing we do is we give our new clients a behavioral assessment, and you're familiar with that. So we really find out who is that person. They may be a very strong, dominant personality, and they may be very fine-tuned to all the details of things. You know, we call it the DISC profile. However, it really doesn't matter what you are. It's all about who is your client, who is your customer, how do you create that connection, and how do you amend your behavior? And I'm not talking about changing your personality. I'm talking about communication behavior. So when you're dealing with somebody that has a different behavioral style than you do, you really need to look at, okay, what do I need to do? What are some of the things that I am trained to look at to make sure that I'm communicating with them in the way that they want to be communicated with?
So when you go through this DISC analysis with them, is that done for each and every salesperson or anyone who interfaces with the customer?
We won't do a sales training right now without doing a behavioral assessment prior, and we do them on a sales level. We do them on a human resources level, on a general assessment, but we really want to know what is their inherent behavioral style, what's their natural style, but more importantly, than that is what styles do they need to adapt to in order to be an effective communicator? Because sales is just all it really is communication. I mean, it's understanding somebody's behavioral communication style and adapting to theirs. You know, if it's somebody who's very slow and thoughtful and you know, doesn't want a lot of fast details, you rear it back a little bit. You don't go at them, you know, where somebody is wanting things and, you know, with the snap of their fingers. It's creating that connection with certain people, but other people don't want a connection. They just want details. So it's really understanding, you know, looking at body language, looking at how, you know, the way their office is set up, just very, you know, fine-tuning your approach to their behavioral style.
So what, for instance, you go into an organization, you conduct a DISC analysis of these individuals, then you're going to have quite a bit of data there and quite a different set of individuals with regard to the behavioral aspects of the DNA of those people. How do you manage that, or how do you take that all and combine it into something that is going to be aligned with the overall corporate mission and servicing that customer? That it's a very, very difficult challenge, I would imagine.
Well, you know, we send out the assessments. They're all done online about probably 10 to 14 days prior to that workshop, and everybody has taken it. It's led by the owner of the company or whoever is owning the project. And we really put our emphasis around making sure that everybody takes one. And so often people say, well, I don't want to take a person. It's not a personality test. All we're really merely trying to understand is what is your communication style. So people, you know, our participants show up at the training session. And for the first hour and a half, we go over a general synopsis of everybody's own behavioral assessment. We don't pick anybody out. We don't say, well, this guy is, you know, has a problem here or opportunity here, but we talk about it in a general fashion, but everybody's reading their own assessment, and we take it through step by step on really how do people see you? You know, they often say that what you think on the inside is the way people see you on the outside. Well, again, so we talk about what do you need to do in order to adapt to other styles. And then the rest of the DISC portion of our presentation is adapting and recognizing other people's styles and what to do when you're working with those type of clients. And the same thing works for relationships. It works with spousal relationships. It works with your children. If you really understand how to communicate best with other people, you have a huge advantage of making sure that they hear what you're saying. Otherwise, they've blocked you out immediately if you're not adapting to what they're learning and their communication style.
That makes sense with regard to what you're doing. Now, the thing is, I would think there'd probably be a lot of individuals where you get the a little fearful of being analyzed in that regard. And how do you contend with that?
You know, it's
how do you sell this internally?
Once they get there, a lot of it is humor. You know, my partner Mark and I are very good at making people, you know, comfortable in the process. And a lot of it, you know, a lot of our presentation has humor built into it. We're pretty quick with, you know, picking up on expressions. You know, we look at the audience very carefully to see, you know, whose face is a little, you know, disgruntled or whatnot. So then we just really ease into it. And we don't say that one style is good or bad. There's positives in all styles. You know, a CEO has a different style than for instance, a technical person. But you really have to understand and help them understand that it's not good or bad. It just is what it is. But again, more importantly, it's not who you are. It's who you're trying to connect with.
Now, you probably have uncovered some real wild cards in this analysis where people that they thought they were something, and in reality, they were not that same individual.
Oh, it's Jeff.
From a personality perspective.
It's hilarious because, you know, people say, well, that's not me. That's not me. And then there's people around in the workshop, in the room, and they say, well, yeah, that is you, you know, because a lot of behavior, a lot of our behavior is caused by stressors. So if you're a little stressed, your behavior changes just, you know, slightly, but people can see that. You may not think that your behavior or your communication style is changing, but obviously it is. When you become very stressed, then you really start showing some parts of your yourself that really aren't as appealing as you'd like them to be. So a lot of times you know the people in the room pretty much gauge if these people are, you know. And again, it's never been a huge problem because we're pretty good at diffusing any crisis that comes up from something like that. But again, we work on their self, and then we move past it. We say, we're not even going to deal with who you are anymore. Let's focus on the behavioral style.
So you must have a politician's hat in the back of your car that you put in right after you've given the disassembly and go in there and presenting it, right?
I just tell a bad joke or two, and everybody forgets about that.
Oh, okay. Not more part of those, right, Joe?
Oh, just a few.
Oh, so. You're pretty – yeah, I know you for that, okay? So, I mean I could see that being somewhat confrontational. When you walk in there with those surveys, though, they're probably ready to shoot you or sling arrows at you or whatever.
Well, it's funny because we've gotten a couple, you know, we send everything out in advance and we're communicating with them for the first time via an email. So we've gotten some responses like, why are you doing this? Who's going to see this? And it's, you know, trying to diffuse that situation off the get-go is sometimes challenging. But that's why we need the buy-in of the leader of that organization. You know, this is something we're doing. Nobody's going to get fired. Nobody's going to get, you know, any repercussion from it. But so often after the fact is the leaders would like to see how their team came out as far as the behavioral assessment. And that's up to the company that's using us for the training.
So basically there's been no reassignment to individuals as a result of these studies. It's just
none that I know of.
Okay.
Yeah. And so often, you know, salespeople have a different set of tendencies than, you know, for instance, an engineer or an accountant. You know, they might be a very, you know, compliant. Details are very important. And typically for a salesperson, you know, details are one of the least important things as far as writing them down. They're important as far as the selling process, but keeping track of all the stuff is sometimes a challenge for them.
So you've reached, that's a great point there, John. And I think now with the complexity, if you look at companies that are out there selling CRM systems and sales automation products and what have you, the sales individual out there now has to be detail-oriented more so than in the past because of the fact that they're required to input data into these systems now. Before, you know, they could put whatever they want on a scrap piece of paper or do anything. Now they're required to do that. So it's within the whole sales sector, it's a fundamental change in the way that they do business and their mentality and everything else.
Absolutely.
And so how do you get them to change, particularly people who have been out there selling for years?
You know, I think the people that are going to win this CRM race and all that are going to make it as easy for their salespeople as possible. They're going to do it via applications on their smartphones. It's going to be a process where you really don't need 50 pieces of information on every single call. You need 5 to 10 pertinent pieces of information. More important, you know, most importantly, what to do, how to follow up, if the customer had any questions, when to get back to them, and when to, you know, contact them again. So much of the information is just for information's sake, but the critical parts really need to be adhered to. So when we work with people, we really try to boil it down to say what's most important for your business and what's most important for the client. I mean, because if you're only taking numbers for internal purposes, you're really not doing your customer any justification. You know, granted, in the long run, you'll know more information about them, but your salespeople are going to just be filling stuff out just for the sake of filling it out versus getting back to your customers in a very timely fashion, which again is critical to creating, you know, client relationships.
And I think it creates further frustration among the sales individuals. And I like your idea though, really focusing in on those 5 points that are really critical to consummating the sale.
Mm-hmm.
What information? Because like you said, there's a lot of superfluous information, but what happens within organizations, you know, John, they are accountable for, did the salesperson fill this out and every dot every I and cross every T within that CRM? And if they don't, then the person who's managing that system is held accountable. So I think it's incumbent upon the VPs of marketing or sales, whatever, to just focus in on those 5 points. If the people have actually done that, then fine. That might be the way that they operate. But if they're making their numbers, they're filling this information in that's critical to business, then let it be in a lot of cases.
Absolutely. I mean, the most important part is what is the follow-up? Again, what is critical to follow up on proceeding that, you know, for client satisfaction? And again, you know, Jeff, you could say it could be 5 to 10, whatever that number is, but really boiling it down to the right, getting the right information down, not just for the sake of information and to be, you know, justify your existence as middle management or wherever, whoever's collecting that data.
But that starts with strong leadership at the top.
Exactly.
And also being cognizant of what really is necessary to run that business.
And again, that's a coaching opportunity, because if you're really a good manager, have your folks tell you about some of your customers. Listen, let them explain and really take into, you know, some of the key points that they're making. So instead of having to regurgitate every single thing onto a piece of paper, you know, have an hour conversation with your key salespeople once or twice a week and listen to them what has happened and really what's happening, you know, at the level of the street sale or to, you know, directly to the customer.
Now, you know, given the complexity of CRMs, what have you seen out there, John? Is, again, you named one of the best practices looking at those 5 to 10 data points that are critical. Anything else that with regard to either selling a CRM system to salespeople? How do you do that internally or selling within management and getting them to use it? What are some of the things that you've seen companies do that have been most effective in that area in using these sales automation tools?
You know, there's really great CRM products out there, and again, they're devoted specifically to a business that they've created it for. One of the worst things you can do is just take a system off the shelf and just start creating data for data's sake. So it all boils down to what is your company's key result indicators? What are you trying to accomplish through that? And then creating those performance indicators. What are the actions that you need to take, you know, step by step? So that really should be the basis of any CRM. Is it going towards the goal that you want to achieve as a company? Not just for sheer numbers and measurement, but really does it add revenue to the overall scope of your business? Are you increasing sales? Are you adding more customers? You know, management needs to know exactly what's going on, but not to such a detailed approach that it swallows the salesperson up and it swallows, you know, the process. You know, then decision making becomes even longer in that regard.
Now, with regard to that, what are some of the, as far as sales automation and that, what are some of the things you've seen, not just CRMs, but some of the other tools that you might have come across recently that companies are using effectively or not effectively? I think a lot of them are gathering dust within organizations. I might be wrong.
We have just gotten together with a company. We've done a joint business venture on e-learning. I think it's going to be something that's going to be much more prevalent in the future. But we call it learning management systems, where you're able to create data and create technology differences, customer differences, brand differences, and doing it through a portal where somebody can go in on their smartphone, at their laptop, at their desktop, and really understand the measurable items that a company is putting out. So it's about information flow going out as well as coming in. So often, we get on, people are busy during the day and, they don't have time to get on a variety of conference calls. So if they can go and understand what some of the things that the company are trying to accomplish via an e-learning, an LMS type program, and really understanding the product differences and variances, that has become something that we found that we're going to try to, grow our business as well, as our future goes.
Now, again, getting back to the basic fundamentals, we started out with the phone calls and that, John. Mm-hmm. What is the next step that you take them in after the phone call process has been maximized and they've learned everything they can, or most everything that came within that area? What is the next step in the overall training process with some of these companies?
Very basic. It starts with the management level, though. It starts with the leadership. So let's pick a retailer in any city. Let's say he's got 10 locations. It's getting that team of leadership together. So there'd be 10 store managers plus the owner, plus whoever else is involved in the process. So there's typically about 10 to 12 people, and we sit down and we actually have a conversation and talk about what are the things that are important for your business. Again, we referred to them before as the key result indicators. But what are the things that are important for your business? How do you measure success in your business? What does success look like? So everybody is on the same page and the same table discussing operational excellence. What do we need to do? What are some of the things that we're trying to push at a store level? So it's the biggest portion of sales training starts with coaching at the management level. How can we make these people more effective at what they're doing, and how can they in turn take that discipline and work with salespeople individually? They may only have three or four salespeople under their guidance. But the most important thing is for them to act as coaches and not trying to, take over sales, not trying to, do things that are outside the realm of really what they should be doing. And that's leading that specific, organization. It goes to coaching the installation group. It goes to installation, the operations team. It's not only sales trainers, but everybody starts looking at it as what is the company's goals and objectives. And once the salesperson understands that, then they start fine-tuning their approach to making sure that they're giving the company exactly what they need. And that's a more refined, fine-tuned approach to selling. The obvious thing is the coach needs to work with them on opening a sale, building that rapport, asking the right questions, asking open-ended questions, understanding about the consumer's lifestyle, making recommendations as far as what's technically applicable for the client.
I think you have a really valid point there with regard to goals and objectives. I remember when I was actually studying in graduate school, and that we all studied about mission statements in alignment with the mission. I thought it was a bunch of fluff, okay, mm-hmm. quite honest with you. What are they trying to teach us with regard to mission statements and that? And so I turned that page very quickly. However, having been in the corporate environment for many, many years, realize how critical a factor that is, because the fact that you establish a mission statement, the goals and objectives that tie into that mission statement, and that should be the driving force behind everything that you do. Mm-hmm. And if you're not aligned in that particular way, and the people within the organization, it's going to be a nightmare.
Absolutely.
So I think it's very, very important that you actually have some type of mission statement that is actually printed out and it's shared with everyone within an organization, as well as with your salespeople out there, the goals and objectives for that particular organization and for each and every one of them. And write them down, make them measurable, so that everyone is accountable within their organization. It's not a bunch of fluff.
No, you know, you ask most business owners, their objective is to make more money, to make more sales. But there's a path to get there. There's a logical sequence of things to do to make sure that your revenue is to where it should be. But it just doesn't start by saying, go sell more of this. You know, most people are going to scratch their head and say, well, how do we do that? How are you supporting it? Are you giving us the right tools? Do we have the right merchandise? Do we have the right pricing? So there's a lot of things that go into how are you creating that, you know, that type of environment for both your leaders and your salespeople.
But I think most organizations, a lot of organizations, particularly small ones, maybe in the enterprise space, that's fairly routine, I would think. But in smaller organizations, it's not something that's actually out there, you know, stated, so that the employees, the salespeople, and everyone else in the organization is aware of it and follows through on it.
Well, you know, I could refer to this, but we both know a restaurant that we've gone to where a couple of the people there are so rude that they turn off people. But have you ever gone into a Chick-fil-A, and I hope that's okay that I've mentioned them on air, but you've gone into a Chick-fil-A, everything is my pleasure. I mean, so you walk away from a Chick-fil-A, you are absolutely, you know, you had a great customer experience. I mean, just for the way they walk around. But you go to a deli, you know, anywhere inside outside of Atlanta or wherever, and they give you rude behavior, you're unlikely to really visit that or, you know, go to that restaurant as often as they'd like you to come back.
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, you want to create, in this day and age, I hate to use the buzzword, you know, customer experience.
But exactly.
It all comes down to that, and really teaching companies how to do that from a sales perspective. The sales is certainly a critical factor, and certainly one of the things that I've done is, you know, I've interviewed a number of people from the Ritz-Carlton organization, and I can't think of an organization that does a better job in that particular area than creating a phenomenal customer experience.
Oops.
Another one is Starbucks,
yep,
where you go in there, you'll pay three or four times what you pay elsewhere for a cup of coffee because of the customer experience. And they do a great job of training their people. The other one is Apple, although Apple has certainly, Taylor has shaken up has really shaken up, I should say, Apple this week with what she has done. But nevertheless, great customer experience, and they're firing on all cylinders with regard to what they do, the customer experience, the sales experience, and everything else that they do. The people are—it's just amazing.
It's a whole different experience when you walk into one of those places. I mean, we could go on; the list is countless. But we could also go on and talk about the places that we've gone into that will never go back again because the customer experience was so poor. I mean, so, you know, probably the toughest business to create that experience is the restaurant business. If you're letting people not treat your customers well, and the management is not there and the owner's not there, guess what happens? You know, you get a very flat experience, and you're least likely, you know, or not likely to go back. So, you know, that every single you referred to it, you know, earlier on in an interview, every single person in your organization winds up being a salesperson for you. Every one of those, you know, those teenage kids at a counter at Chick-fil-A is a salesperson for them. You know, every person working at the Nordstrom's, you know, department stores, they're a salesperson for them. Ritz-Carlton, the same thing. And that's what continues the customer experience.
No, you're totally correct on that, John. And I think that is something that companies need to measure. How are the people doing? Each and every individual that interfaces with the public should be accountable for that and measured accordingly,
mm-hmm,
and graded. I think that leads to a much more effective interaction with the customers and creating customer lifetime values.
Well, it creates an attitude from the customer. If a customer starts off with a negative attitude or an attitude that is less than positive because they didn't get a very nurturing experience right off the get-go, they're very unlikely to continue that experience, or they're never coming back. But if you really overwhelm them with, and not in a phony way, but a very sincere way, with great customer attitude and or service attitude and service experience, you're going to have these people coming back, you know, regardless. And it doesn't matter. I mean, your prices need to be in line, but nonetheless, when there's a tie, guess who wins the tie?
And the thing that's interesting about that, it doesn't cost much. It takes a little bit of training in how these people should treat others, and it doesn't cost a ton of money. But most companies overlook this as a fundamental aspect of the business that's going to contribute as a key for success extraordinaire.
That should be the biggest part of their marketing plan, is getting their entire team talking to the customer the same way, in a very positive way. And you're right, Jeff, it doesn't cost nearly as much as it would cost you to run a promotion or an ad. It's just, that's how you get repeat business. That's how you get people coming back. You know, you want that first customer, but don't you want them to come back that 10th time or that 20th time? And that's the way to build it. I mean, that's every really great salesperson has people telling other people that I work with an extraordinary person. People like to talk about great experiences. On the flip side of that, and you guys deal with this more so than anybody, is negative customer experiences. Guess where they're going to go? They're going to go right to the internet. They're going to write a comment section. And how people manage their social media presence right now is critically important, because not every customer experience is going to be outstanding, but if you manage it correctly, you're going to gain more wins by stepping up and looking the problem right in the face.
Yeah, it's phenomenal what's going on. The need to respond very, very quickly with regard to social media is critical now.
Absolutely.
With any organization. I can tell you, in my particular case, this national pet chain, I don't want to name who they are, but basically I reached out to them through Twitter and complained about the way they were doing business. Unfortunately, my dog passed away about 5 weeks ago. And what happened in that particular case, John, is I reached out to them. They tried to charge us for an entire year with regard to the health care policy for the dog. And we said no. You know, the dog had passed away within a week of the start of the new year. I reached out to them, I think it was four times, with tweets. Did I get a response from them? Nothing. It went on total deaf ears. I will never do business with them again. And here I am spreading the word of this particular company to 305,000, I think it is, individuals. I lose track of how many followers I have on Twitter. But nevertheless, a very huge audience with regard to this organization. And that goes out to millions of people could conceivably see that. So what you want to do is you want to make sure that you nip that in the bud. If someone has a bad experience with you, you reach out to them and you talk to them. You do whatever's necessary to try to allay any of the concerns of that particular customer so that doesn't go out to millions of people conceivably if someone has a complaint.
Oh, I agree totally. My partner and I, he's in the studio right now. He's sitting there looking at me. He's kind of a raised eyebrow right now. But we were down at a national hotel chain doing an event a few weeks ago, and we went down early and we decided to go to a nice hotel right on the beach. Well, they as we're checking in, they gave us a coupon for 10% off all food and beverage. What does that mean? 10% off all food and beverage in the restaurant. So when we go to check out, he goes to hand in that coupon for the 10% off, and the person behind the desk says, we can't do that. It's at the time of the purchase. Well, nowhere on the coupon was it explained. So essentially, she goes back and forth, says, well, these are the rules. Who made, where is it stated that? Well, those are the rules that we're told. Well, no, you really didn't state that. Long story short, she has to go to her manager. She goes through the whole process. Instead of just satisfying somebody right there and then and saying, you know what, you're right, it does say that. Give us the decision authority. And when I say give us, give the people that are dealing with the frontline customer decision authority to say, you know what, you're absolutely right, and I'm going to make a decision. And if they don't have the authority, fine, the manager should get involved. But don't argue with a customer about the use of a coupon for that purpose.
Again. This gets back to proper training within mm-hmm. organizations. Is that individual should have been trained how to react within that particular situation. and address that accordingly.
Exactly.
But like I said, not many companies are doing this.
Right.
And so what is going to happen now? It left a really bad taste in your mouth with regard to that organization or that hotel wherever you stayed. And the likelihood of that being your first choice of where to stay again is going to be very low.
Exactly.
You're going to look elsewhere because of the bad experience you had there. And just think, if they had taken that person aside and trained them for 15 minutes even on how to react to a situation like that, you would have walked away. They would have immediately taken it into their own hands with regard to how to resolve this. You would have walked away, okay, they made a mistake. However, they rectified it very, very quickly. You would have been a pleased customer, ready to go back there, and more importantly, ready to tell others of the great experience that you had out there. And I bet your experience there had probably been extraordinary up until that point. However, that last point that you had there, that last bad experience, is probably what dictates what your overall impression is walking away from that hotel. And
absolutely,
you're going to tell others about that as well.
Absolutely.
So it's critical, again, very minimal amount of training necessary at a very low cost to produce phenomenal rewards, revenue-wise and customer experience-wise for any organization. John, I hate to say it, but we've had such a lively discussion here today that time has really gotten away from me. And it's just been a phenomenal guest, John Newman. If you could perhaps indicate how people can get in touch with you to learn all the ins and outs, the tricks of the trade from John Newman.
Well, I would love them to visit our new website. We just launched it. We've had a few websites, but we've got a newly launched website. It's www.truenorthgrowth, all one word, truenorthgrowth.com. Or they could email me at jon@truenorthgrowth.com. I'd love to, if you just want to pick up the phone and call me, I'll even give that number out right now, if that's okay, 770-316-6009. If there's a situation you have within your business or you just want to talk to somebody about, you know, how to accomplish certain results, I'd love to talk to you. But thanks so much for having me on.
John, it's been a real pleasure. And for all the guests out there, the listeners, I really appreciate this. This is Jeff Sheehan from the Sales Influencers Radio Show. And until next show, have an enjoyable afternoon and evening.